Mansur and Dorian removed 15 chests of gold from the bilges of the Arcturus. When they had weighed them, they found that, as Verity had said, each one contained a lakh of the precious metal. "My father is a neat, fastidious man," Verity explained. "Originally the gold was delivered to him from the treasuries of Oman and Constantinople in a profusion of coins of various dates and empires and denominations, in bars, beads, and coils of wire. My father had it melted down and recast into standard bars of 10 pounds weight, with his crest and the assayed purity stamped into each." "This is a vast fortune," Dorian murmured, as the 15 chests were lowered into the hold of the Revenge, where they would be under his direct charge. "My brother was a rich man." "Do not feel sorry on his behalf," Verity said. "He is a rich man still. This is but a small part of his wealth. There is much more than this in the strong room of the consulate in Bombay. It is zealously guarded by my brother Christopher, who sets greater store by it even than my father does." "You have my word on it, Verity, that what we do not use in the struggle to free Muscat from Zane's baleful thrall will be returned to the treasury in Muscat, whence most of it was stolen. It will be used for the benefit of my people." "I trust your word on that, Uncle, but the truth is that I am sickened by it, for I have been party to its acquisition by a man who prizes it above humanity." Once the gold was out of her, they could warp the Arcturus onto the beach and careen her. Then the work went swiftly, for they had gathered much experience from the repairs they had carried out on the Revenge. This time they were also able to call upon the expertise of Captain Cornish. He cherished his ship like a beautiful mistress, and his advice and assistance were given unstintingly. Dorian came more and more to rely on him, although by rights he was an enemy prisoner of war. In his own bluff, bucolic manner, Ruby Cornish was Verity's ardent admirer. He sought the first opportunity to be alone with her. This was while she was sitting on the black sands of the beach, sketching the scene as the workmen swarmed over the careened hull of the Arcturus. The patterns of lines and ropes stretched over the graceful hull reminded her of a spider's web, and the contrast of clean white plain timbers against the jagged black rock intrigued her. "May I take a few minutes of your time, Mistress Courtney?" Cornish stood before her and doffed his hat, holding it across his chest. Verity looked up from her easel and smiled as she laid aside her pencils. "Captain Cornish, what a pleasant surprise! I thought you'd quite forgotten me." Cornish turned an impossible shade of scarlet. "I've come to beg a favour of you." "You have only to ask, Captain, and I will do my best on your behalf. Mistress, at the moment I am without employment, as my ship has been seized by Caliph Al-Salil, who I understand is an Englishman and related to you." "It is all very confusing, I agree, but yes, Al-Salil is my uncle. He's expressed the intention of sending me back to Bombay or to Muscat. I have lost your father's ship, which was in my charge," Cornish went on doggedly. "And, begging your pardon, your father is not a man who forgives readily. He will hold me directly responsible." "Yes, I rather suspect he may do so." "I'd not like to explain the loss of the ship to him." "That might indeed be prejudicial to your continued good health." "Mistress Verity, you've known me since you were a young girl. Could you find it in your conscience to recommend me to your uncle, the Caliph, for continued employment as the captain of the Arcturus? I think you know that in the circumstances I will be loyal to my new employer. In addition, it would give me the greatest pleasure to think that our long acquaintance will not end here." They had indeed known each other for several years. Cornish was a fine seaman and a loyal servant. She also had a special affection for him, in that he had on many occasions proved himself her staunch but discreet ally. Whenever possible, he had shielded her from her father's perverted malice. "I shall see what can be done, Captain Cornish." "You're very kind," he muttered gruffly, clapped his hat back on his head and saluted her. Then he stamped away through the loose black sand. Dorian did not have to ponder long on the request. As soon as the Arcturus was refitted and floated off the beach, Cornish resumed command of her. Only 10 of his seamen refused to come with him. When the little flotilla sailed from Sorda Island, it headed southwest to pick up the warm, benign waters of the Mozambique Current, which, with the monsoon winds, bore them rapidly southwards along the Fever Coast. Some weeks later they hailed a large trading dhow on an easterly heading. When Dorian exchanged news with him, her captain explained that he was on a trading expedition to the distant ports of Cathay. He was delighted to add the 10 reluctant seamen from the Arcturus to his own crew. Dorian was content with the knowledge that it might take years for their report to filter back to Muscat or to the English consulate in Bombay. Then they all set sail that the monsoon winds would allow and went on southwards through the channel between the Long Island of Madagascar and the African mainland. Slowly the wild, unexplored coastline unfolded on their right hand until at last they raised the high whaleback bluff that guarded Nativity Bay, and sailed in through the narrow entrance. It was the middle of the day, but there was no evidence of human presence at the fort, no smoke from chimneys, no washing flapping on the lines, no children playing on the beach. Dorian was concerned for the welfare of his family. It was almost 3 years since they had sailed away, and much might have happened in that time. There were many enemies, and in their absence the fort might have been overwhelmed by man, famine, or pestilence. Dorian fired a gun as they glided in towards the beach, and was relieved to see the sudden stir of activity around the fort. A row of heads popped up along the parapet, the gates were flung open, and a motley crowd of servants and children ran out. Dorian lifted his telescope and trained it on the gates. His heart leapt with joy as he saw the big bear-like figure of his brother Tom striding through and heading down the path towards the beach, waving his hat over his head. He had not reached the edge of the water before Sarah followed him, running out of the gates. When she caught up with him, she linked her arm through his. Her happy cries of welcome carried across the water to the ships as they anchored. "You were right again," Verity told Mansur. "If that is my Aunt Sarah, I already like her passing fair."